If Murray has supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blubbity Blah.
Sending out good vibes.
Good vibes. Underneath breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grammerica Show. We're going to be chatting with friend of the show, Mark England, a little bit later. Of course, we're just hanging out with Mark down in Ohio. He came and met us at the Serp Mount. We'll be hanging out with him again in Tennessee in March, doing his How You Change Your Words, Change Your Life, which is a pretty powerful presentation. Of course, he's doing that through Enlifted. Great chat with Mark. We're looking forward to hanging out with him again in a few months. I guess what, like 7, 8 months? 9 months? 8 months.
Yeah. That's good. His Instagram is Enlifted Coaches. So EN Lifted Coaches. And his website is enlifted.me. So he's a Enlifted Method Coach. Mindset is the story you tell yourself. Certified. They've certified 500 plus coaches to turn stuck stories into action. So that's kind of a quick bio. He used to be like a MMA kind of fighter guy, and he had an experience where he got really badly injured, and he was in, I think he was in Thailand when that happened or something. We also had an old episode with him on it, like how many years ago? 4 or 5 years ago now, I guess.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, something like that. Yeah, 4 years ago, probably. Which probably means six.
Yeah.
If usually
I'm off. Yeah, time has slipped away.
Time seems to slip away.
10 years I got behind you.
Speaking of time slipping away, did you get your rails bolted in yet?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
But yeah, have you figured out the bolt?
You're not gonna believe how bad it was.
My process of elimination by trying every other possible bolt.
You're not going to believe how bad it was.
Let's hear it.
Well, I figured out it was what bolt it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or what I thought. So the wrong one comes from Home Depot. So we go back, ask the lady. She gives the wrong one again. So then we go to the Bolt Supply House, which is the actual like hardware bolt store in town, right? They give us the wrong ones. I'm asking for a very specific thread and what I think it is, right? I'm like, I still haven't tried the M12 1.5 thread, right? Get it back. Doesn't work. I'm like, oh my God, I really expected that to be perfect, right? The next day I look at the packaging. The wrong one. They gave us a 1.25, like the finest thread. So then I'm like, oh my God, this is fucking unbelievable. I go to Amazon. Oh, they have them in Amazon. Order them. Wrong bolts show up. M10s.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, dude. I was just like, this is incredible. So I was calling around and the kit, plus the generic kit that I bought to install the rails really is not really going to work on the front clips going in. So I'm just taking it to the Tiger shop. There's a shop that'll do it for me now. So they're going to do it. The kit itself is $350.
Damn.
It's unbelievable.
From just bolting on rails to a total shit show.
Yep. And I mean, it shouldn't be a shit show, right? But I thought that the generic kit should work good enough. And it might have, like, I dry fitted the front, the angle that I had. It's like there's a weird offset angle with slots and stuff. And I dry fitted it on one side and it fit fine. I was like, it barely, but it fit. And in the back, they fit too. And then I have to buy this kit anyway. So I'm like, just going to get them to do it. I kind of gave up.
I'll make the bolt.
What?
I said, if it's close, I'm going to make that bolt every time.
Yeah. That's kind of what I figured I'd be able to do.
Coming from a background of trying to make holes line up for a living, basically, for 20 years.
I figured just I could probably hammer it. But the other side is really, it's really jammed in. Like, there's no room on the other side.
So that's
good. It's disgusting, right? It's like what you told me about the mattress, right? You find the short queen, all of a sudden the short queen mattress for a camper goes up to fucking $900 from $150 to $900.
Do you have to get the short queen?
It's going to be 6 inches hanging over, 6 inches too long. So you can do it, I guess, if you want to lose 6 inches right around that thin area when you come into your sleeping area. But it's just everything camping related just seems to just jack the price up. So the stupid kit, the only Canadian kit.
And it's usually shittier.
The only Canadian kit, right, is $350.
Just for the bolts?
Just the hardware kit. It's unbelievable. And nobody else, it's Kurt. Kurt is the kit model, right? I tried to call the Husky. I have the Husky hitch. Tried to call them, and it's one of these things like, oh, you know, sometimes you get really good customer service when you call down in the States, right? You sort of go through this loop, pressing one, pressing two, and then it goes to a recording that's not even Husky, right? So then you're like, oh boy. So their website's kind of out of touch. So there's like something going on with Husky towing products that's either they've been bought out or, you know, so that's another.
Why didn't you get a Reese?
Yeah, that was the other option, but because I had a Husky hitch, I tried to go Husky first.
And it turns out they're out of business and all their parts.
Oh, Reese has been out of business, yeah.
Oh, is Reese out of business?
Yeah. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I thought they were one of the most popular ones.
Who's the most popular then, I wonder?
Well, Kurt, I think. Kurt makes the specific kit for that Dodge.
For that Dodge.
Yeah. So I get the generic kit in, right? And I'm looking for my, and it's got a list of all these trucks, all these Rams, all these Chevy. I mean, mine's not on the list. I'm like, oh, I can make this work. And then the bolts don't work. And then you know what? I went to the dealer to try and get them to help, right? Figure, can you just pull up your drawing? Tell me what bolt goes in that thing? Because this is at the point where I didn't realize they had sent me the wrong bolt again, right? Until I looked at the packaging. I just assumed I ordered it online. The guy looked for it. It was picked up. I ordered it on the phone. And then I'm like, well, the dealer must be able to tell me what bolt size that is in the drawing, right? All these trucks have the same frame. There's the same hole patterns drilled out. The same nuts are welded in. They can't tell you. But I found it on the Mopar, some sort of aftermarket Mopar website, thanks to
like a forum,
my assistant, that has like a drawing, and it had the right bolt on it. It's like, there's your M12 1.5. It's exactly what I thought.
Allegedly. I mean, we'll never know.
No, the place that I'm taking it to has the bolt in stock. Like, the bolt is in the kit. They can't separate it out, but.
Well, is the camper working along better at least?
Well, yeah. I fixed the leaks and stuff, but I haven't really done much. My cat passed away today, so it's been a couple days. Forgot my mom's birthday yesterday. That didn't go very well.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's been a couple days. Yeah.
Mom was pissed?
No, she's okay.
Well, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Mom. Happy belated. Sorry, your son's just flailing.
He just wanted to wait to do it on the show. Birthday shout out from Mom on the show. Beats a phone call any day. I mean, come on. Let's be serious. Well, I'm trying to find a little tiny spring right now.
For what?
The bolt holds the choke closed on the carburetor. Just a touch. So that when the air tries to force, it can force. So, yeah, really not much to this little fucking spring, but I gotta get it. So just gonna, I'm like looking at getting it. Can't get it. They want $102 for it at the marine store here. $102. Like if I showed you this thing, you're like, it's literally less material than the key ring on this tiny little set of keys.
It's unbelievable, like, dude. I don't know how we're gonna survive this. I don't know how.
It's like a 4-inch, or it's like a 2-inch little piece of like tiny little, the smallest guitar string wire right, into it with a little spring, a little thing on it. And it's $102. And I'm just like, that's fucking outrageous. And it's going to take 3 weeks to get here.
That's unbelievable.
Like, are you making it? This is what it is. They're making me buy a 5-pack of them. And I'm like, I'm never going to need one of these things again in my life. Well, neither will we. So you got to buy the 5-pack. Or I could buy it out of the States and pay $60 shipping.
I was asking you about this too, because I'm like trying to wind the spare tire down to get underneath the back of the truck, right? And of course, this truck I bought, that's not included, right? Somebody's ripped it off already, so it's not there, right? So I go to the car dealership, $380 for the extension thing that goes in to unwind the spare. And they can't get, it's like back ordered forever, like $300.
Did you figure it out?
So I went to the junkyard.
$20.
$15. $15. But it didn't look right. It didn't look like the end was missing. But when I jammed it in there and got it, and I made sure it just went in with my hand or whatever, and it worked. So somehow I was going to try to find the proper, because I heard there was a 9/16 would work. But you know what? They made it a specific stupid size. They couldn't just keep it standard.
You know what it is? It's a fucking 1/2-inch drive.
Well, I heard 9/16.
I've done this before. So you take your whole ratchet. I've taken, you know what? It might be a 3/8. It's either a 3/8 or a 1/2-inch. And you just put all your like ratchet extensions on there.
I know. And then you can get it.
And it's this little box in at the end that the end of the ratchet will grab. And then you turn it with a pair of vice grips.
Yeah.
But it took like, and then if you're, the problem then is if your extensions start falling off while they're jammed in that tube, you're going to have a hard time getting them back.
Yeah. But we couldn't even get it in. I had to put my hand up underneath the bumper and then actually guide the thing in from blindly. And then I'm like, oh, it fits there. And then, and it worked. I couldn't believe it in the end. But anyways, these are just silly little troubles. But the point was that for that mechanism that should be standard, should be easy for anybody to remove their bloody tire. And it's $380 and you can't get it anyways.
It's a real shame.
Yeah.
It's a real shame. The world's gone to shit, buddy.
It's weird. It's very
That's
weird.
That's the last little spring I need on the boat, though. Other than that, she ripped.
It looks good. I like that boat. I like the look of it. It's got this old 70. You were saying, like, we were talking about muscle cars pulling it. What?
I'll give you a deal. You can come get it with your pink Jeep.
It doesn't match.
Yeah. Well, she polished up nice. It's unbelievable what a bit of polish. And some wax will do to those old fiberglass.
Oh, yeah. And that's red. And it's that red color. And those seats look really like they look like they're made for that. The red on the seats matches. It looks sharp. And it's like one of those old 70s speedboats, right? Kind of. I mean, I don't know what's the actual brand, not Comet. The brand, but the what?
It's a Comet.
Is that what they're called? No, but what kind of boat is it? Like, not kind, but is it a speedboat? Is it considered
a speedboat? It's got to just be a speedboat. I mean, it weighs next to nothing with a huge motor on it. I don't know that the motor's factory. I wouldn't say that the motor, because it's a lot of motor for that boat. If you had that motor on and it's a bit wavy and you put it in reverse and hammer it, you will be at the bottom of the lake in about fucking 60 seconds. Don't like going backwards. Best to just go forwards. If it's calm and you go slow, you'd be fine. But if you're like going backwards into waves, but I mean, Eclipse, for that little boat, for it to be like 70 pounds of tongue weight, I can just pick it up and move it around my driveway easily by hand. You could tow it with anything. It weighs next to nothing. And I've done 25 miles an hour to get you up the lake. And that's all you need.
25 miles an hour?
I got 23 out of it, but I still got to put a new spark plugs and another condenser in it because they only had one. So I'm thinking I might get another couple miles an hour out of her yet. I think 25.
I was picturing that being towed by like a 73 muscle car, you know, like what would you have bought? Like that was the last year of the muscle cars. I feel like that boat was like meant to be pulled. Like the cool dudes in the early set. What?
It's light enough. You could pull it with something like that.
Yeah. It would have been like, you know, Trans Am or Camaro or something.
Pulling your 72 Comet with your 69 Camaro.
Yeah.
Ba-da-ba. Well,
I was looking for that muscle car that I like the style of, and I finally found it. It was the Super Sport, the Chevelle. It's a 67 Chevelle Super Sport is the one style that I really like.
The Chevelle?
Yeah, but it doesn't look like the Chevelle. It doesn't have that rounded. It's the first generation Chevelle where it's got a square body, kind of like a square body. So yeah, the Mustang or the GTO could have pulled your Comet.
Hopefully not my Comet for long.
Yeah, exactly.
She's up for sale on Marketplace right now. So hopefully it'll move quickly. Get out of here. On to the next one.
Yeah.
Wish me luck on selling the boat and
yeah, good luck.
We also need some people to support the show. We do have who's this? Oh no, did I cut off the name? Vegas L. Jackson comes through with $20.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, appreciate it. $20. That's the only person I got to mention this week, which is tough, but next week, it'll be great, right? We assume you guys will bounce back in spades. We'll have most emails to read next week that we've ever had on the show. Maybe, possibly. Could that be? Could be, I guess. I mean, it's getting a little wild out there. I haven't really been paying attention, but I did see something about tariffs and not tariffs and tariffs again. Did we capitulate again? Looks like
We don't even want to negotiate with our partners in the States there. So
we're done. We're done negotiating.
Well, we haven't started.
Not even a little.
Just, I don't think so. I mean, hasn't he just ignored it all? I mean, it's almost like they just want to get absorbed by the States.
That method does work sometimes, but not all the time. And eventually you have to switch to a new method. When ignoring the problem for a little while, for long enough, just doesn't work. You gotta switch it up. This is a July 4th show too. We recorded this on July 4th.
I do. Oh yeah, right. I do have a synchro from the States too. That, and it's also boat related, but I haven't read it yet. So I'm going to read it cold if you want.
A cold read. Okay. Yeah.
So this is from, Gary, who's been sending a bunch of synchros in lately. So something's going on with Gary's life right now. If this isn't a synchronicity, then I honestly don't know what is. Maybe a simulation. My wife and I were anchored in East Hampton, New York. We took our dog Larry ashore for a walk. We came across an aluminum hull sailboat sitting on the hard land. Very rare to see an aluminum hull in this area. Being sailors, we stopped to admire it a few minutes. We've never seen or ever heard of this brand before. After we took the dinghy back to our boat, I opened Facebook, and the very first thing I saw was an ad for that exact same sailboat. I've never searched it, never heard of the company, and my phone wasn't even with me when we saw it. Oh, that was going to be the obvious question. Coincidence, crazy synchro, or is this really a simulation? I went back this morning and took a pic of the boat just to be sure it was on the same. It was the same thing, and my eyes weren't playing tricks on me. Yep, same boat as the ad. Hope you guys don't mind me sharing all my crazy experiences. I attached the photos as proof, also of Larry because he's cute. LOL. As always, thanks for the great show. So it just shows like a metal hull sailboat here, an Allure 51. It looks like, or
is it
Allure.
The exact same boat.
Yeah.
Like the exact same boat that's for sale?
Yeah.
Or just the same type?
Well, he said same boat. I mean,
if it's the same boat that's for sale, then you just got to wonder if like his phone was still close enough to the seller's phone that it fucking bloop. Oh, fucking trying to jam these guys up.
get connected with the community. It knows that you're into boats, and it knows that guy's trying to sell a boat. He's like, maybe we can make a sale here.
Yeah. Even though I don't see how Facebook makes any money out of it.
Oh, he said for that ad, there was an ad for that exact same sailboat. So, yep, same boat as the ad. So I don't know if it's like the specific boat or the type of boat. It sounds like he's saying it's the specific boat, but it's a pretty cool looking boat.
Well, he should buy the boat. I mean, that's the moral of the story. I think he should buy that boat.
Yeah, 51-foot sailboat. I used to want to live on a boat. I used to want to sail around, just live on a boat.
Well, we could probably set that up. I'm sure we could find someone. I was looking for some company.
I took sailing lessons when I was 16.
Now you're podcasting. We just put an ad out, a semi-competent sailor podcaster. Bring a Starlink with you. I mean, is it going to have power on that thing? You got to assume those big sailboats got some sort of power generation, right?
No, they must. I don't know. They, some of them have little engines, don't they?
Yeah, you just run in the engine all the time, though, for power. I guess you just fire it up and do your podcast and shut her down. Do a hitch, or what is it when you do a, you go on a, do a leave, try a leave and see how it sits, see how it feels. I mean, it's in your family, right? Your cousin Jeff was a mariner.
Yeah, he was, yeah. Laying cables across the Atlantic or something.
Laying cables, I couldn't do it. It's not for me, man. Fucking done with the ocean. After the fishing in Easter Island, okay, we are done. Anyway, people can come to Easter Island with us if they want. We're going back there April. Going to Easter on Easter Island in April 2028. Malta, spring of 2027. Two Randall Carlsons coming up this fall. And of course, Mark coming up here in a minute with us in March for the Equinox in Tennessee, the Tennessee Reset. Anyway, should we get out of here, I guess?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, let's.
Tired today.
Yeah, me too.
Double podcast day, too. So,
me too, yeah.
All right, well, we hope you guys enjoyed our lazy rounds. We hope even more you enjoy the chat with Mark. You already compared, he kind of did the bio at the beginning, I feel like. So just we love you. Support the show and enjoy the chat with the one and only Mark England.
We've got Mark England back with us from Enlifted. It's been 4.5 years, and we finally met you in person a couple of weeks ago. That was great. So welcome back to Grimerica. How you doing?
Thanks, fellas. Good to see you again. Good to be on the show again. Good to see you again after a couple of weeks. I knew when our main man, breathwork man, Brandon Powell, because he's talked about a lot of contacts at the cabin with you guys. And he just has great stories. I'm like, one of these days, I'm going to make it to one of those things.
Yeah.
And he said Ohio. He said Serpent Mound. I had some plans with some friends in Boston. And I was like, nope, I'm going up there to meet those dudes.
Nice. Did you drive? You drove the whole way? How far was it?
I did. It was 7 hours.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah. If it's under six, I don't even think about it.
Yeah.
Like I drive a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Cause you drive for work, right? Like you'd rather drive around than fly around, or is that the,
it, the- um,
Like I would personally, but if, you know.
I like having my shit with me.
Yeah.
I like having my stuff with me. And so a couple of things converged. I mean, I'll be driving to Tennessee, of course. Shit, I'm going to be driving through Buffalo when you guys are up there with Randall.
Oh.
Yeah, I got time. I'm giving a workshop at a CrossFit gym that last weekend in August, and then I'm driving up there to Halliburton, Canada to do a 3-day event for some human garage people. They do fascial release and stuff. And I'm a hired gun. They bring me in to do the language work. And I'm pretty sure you guys are around that, around Buffalo that August weekend, that last August weekend.
Yeah. We're in Buffalo sort of that weekend of the 30th, 31st. And then we're over to Ithaca for a couple of days and then back in Buffalo on the 5th. Back in Buffalo on the 4th.
Let's talk shop. You know, off the show, I got my truck. I'll come see you. Yeah, you want me to talk? If you want me to talk to your people, happy to do it. Same thing I did last time.
This group loved your seminar, cool, or whatever you want to call it, your workshop. It was good. We had good feedback, and they had a lot of fun. Yeah, we're glad you made it.
Yeah, likewise. For a variety of reasons, the Serpent Mound, file it under weird and cool, 1000%. I have very much enjoyed watching, I'm Uncle Mark to Brandon's kids, watching Brandon's kids grow up. And of course, in the house, got spent 4 days with them. I really like what you all do. I find it very, very interesting what you all do. I mean, you've talked to everyone and everyone worth talking to under the sun about alternative timelines, theories, conspiracies, however you want to call that. And you take people, you're taking people out to these sites and giving them experiences and community. And that's just cool as shit. And then I got to do, some workshops with your community, which they were great, man. Super great. Everybody I talked to was super cool.
Yeah. That's the best part. It really is, like, it's almost like a weekend long podcast, and with people you don't know. It's really interesting. And the people you do know, I mean, we've met, they're like friends for life almost, for a few years, and they're just solid people doing their thing. And to see, I hadn't seen, this'll kind of resonate with you a little bit. I haven't seen a few of these guys for a few years, and to see them like accelerating in their career, a lot of them have their dream jobs. Like, dude, they're just talking about how they've found these opportunities close to home or whatever. They're working their dream jobs. I mean, it's just amazing to hear these people like finding their path in life, It's awesome.
Yeah, you all are helping people improve their lives. That's another way of saying it. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, I mean, that would...
That's how I see it.
Look at it. Yeah.
That's how I see it.
Try to, anyway. I mean, it just sort of... It seems to be a weird gap, There's this... I don't know how to really put my finger on it, because it's almost like the type of thing that maybe you couldn't pull off as just a tour company. You almost need the mix of the podcast community as well to sort of have it gelling, to have that group sort of consciousness in place a little bit, at least, where we kind of all know I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you think about that, but it's like, how do you sort of, I've been trying to figure out how we've been able to cultivate this sort of thing that when I go to other stuff, it just isn't quite there the same.
That's a worthy conversation, and I can participate in that. And some of the tangibles, so there's tangibles to that, and there's the X factor for that. Some of the tangibles is the show, the podcast, where people that listen to you all get to know you. Okay. And committed listeners to podcasts, they feel a connection. Okay. Not only that, they share similar interests. So connection on a personal level, and then a similar interest on a, hey, what the fuck is really going on here level. And those are two foundational, rubber meets the road tangibles. Then there's also an X factor, which I picked up on when I got up there, and I got a, there's some vibe, something's happening here. I mean, you all have been on scenes, plural, over the years where you walk into it and you can just tell something's happening here.
Yeah.
That's hard to describe. Well, it's hard to explain why that's happening. It's just happening. And I've been in the middle of some scenes before, and I've also helped create some of those scenes. And one of those is happening with Enlifted right now. So I can say that, say what I just said to you all with the experience of what I have right now. So people come into our certifications, and I'm one of the co-founders, I'm one of the co-owners, and I'm the head coach. I deliver all of our trainings. And those trainings are no joke. I mean, it's 10 people max per certification, and we all go there. There's nowhere to hide. Everybody's getting plenty, as much as they need, one-on-one interaction, and small group work. The work's very intimate, and it creates a sense of community. People get to know myself and my business partner, Adam, in very real ways. I also go on a lot of shows. This is my 71st podcast. And so they get to know me and us in that way. We share a common interest, which is the power of words and stories. And then there's also an X factor going on, which I can see that there at Enlifted. So, you know, and then also the community piece. This is important. So I figured we would be talking a little bit of a debrief about the Serpent Mound contact at the cabin and why you all do this. You all provide one of the most important opportunities for people to be a part of something, to be in a community. The lack of community will create all kinds of weird issues. Being in a community will remediate all kinds of weird issues. And when you know and like the leaders, y'all, you share similar interests. Okay, you get to go to very interesting places and be a part of a community. Of course, this thing, and then the X factor. Of course, this thing's working. That was my rant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of look at it as, I mean, we just sort of create space and hold it. I mean, because it's the really interesting thing is we don't actually do anything. You know, we find these venues, we get these venues, we get the people together, we bring in guys like yourself and Brandon, and the rest kind of just takes care of itself. And it seems to like the longer we do it and the more the community builds up, it's almost like the more it takes care of itself, because now when there's a new guy feeling awkward in the corner, I don't got to go out, you know, cause it also, oh, okay, this guy's not really fitting in. I got to make a point to get over there at some point here in the next little while and just sort of try to bring him into the fold a little bit. And then by the time I go finish what I'm doing and come back, it's already sort of happened organically on its own.
Yeah. Somebody grabbed him. That's called culture. And that takes time, that takes repetition to develop a culture. And that's another sign of success. That's actually a massive metric of success as a business guy. So we're going out to, you know, we play in some interesting sandboxes. We can, of course, as you know, we showed, walk into a community of people like y'all's community and talk to them about the power of their words and their stories. And then also, you know, have conversations that everybody can relate to. You know, when I mentioned David Icke in a couple of those workshops, I knew that most people would know who that was. Okay. And then some other things too. And then another interesting community. So we've got traction in the CrossFit space, even though my business partner and I aren't into CrossFit at all. Okay? I love me some kettlebells, but I don't do CrossFit. And it's because we went on a podcast 10 years ago, and then that led to about 10 other podcasts of significance in the space. And we're going out to San Jose in 3 weeks. We're one of the main stage speakers for the CrossFit Owner and Coach Conference, sponsored. It's an official CrossFit event 2 days prior to the CrossFit Games. And it's the same conversation. It's the same coaching tech. It's just geared towards a different audience. And one of the things we're talking about a lot there is culture.
Wow.
Because there's a lot of gym owners there. And everybody with three brain cells knows that if the culture is off, you're going to hate the business. If the culture is quote unquote on, my God, the thing runs itself in a lot of ways. Peter Drucker said it. He said, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So, and one last note on that, dude, a lot of the best cultures that I've come across, people that helped create that culture say the same thing. You know, we didn't really try to do this. It just happened on its own. So.
Interesting. Well, we should probably, because we probably do have a bunch of new listeners over the last, things have been going crazy around here the last couple of months, especially on Spotify. So there's probably a bunch of people that don't really know what Enlifted is or what Mark England's up to. Could you just sort of give us
a
rundown of that? And I will mention that, you know, especially like we had guys from the staff that I was talking to, especially Keith, that mentioned that your sort of your two presentations came at like a very important time in his life. They kind of hit right when he needed him to. So he was raving about it for days after.
Nice. Very cool. Well, you know, I'm a couple things, big picture about me, and then we'll get into some of the specifics. I'm a Virginia boy, born and raised, multi-generation on both sides of my family. I'm very blue collar. My dad, his whole side of the family, a bunch of Appalachian hillbilly coal miners. And then my mom's side, they were German master boatsmiths. They owned a marina on one of the tributaries to the Chesapeake, and they built the very best skipjacks, which is a boat for shallow water oyster dredging. And you had to have a Krentz Marina skipjack. So everybody likes to work in my family. And I've had two real jobs in my adult life. I was an elementary school PE teacher. I've got a degree in education. That's what I was doing before I got into personal development or the mindset work, story stuff. And I've been doing that full time for the past 19 years. And that's what I made the decision in 2017 that's what, after 10 years in the game and this thing holding my attention and helping me live an adventurous, fulfilling, worthwhile life. Those are and creating a lot of freedom in my life, and meeting cool people. It just checks all the boxes. Like, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do for a long time. And I defined what a long time is, and a long time is in my calendar, truth be told. In Lifted, we're known as the language people, as in we help people get their language working for them. Most people's language is working against them. What do you mean when you say language, Mark? Glad you asked. When I say language, I mean internal dialogue and external dialogue. Very simple. What we think, what we say, what we write. Those three ways that our words interact with us, most people have zero training on how to improve that. We can file everything. Everything we did in those two workshops, the Serpent Mound, stuff we're going to do in Tennessee, all of it under very important things you didn't learn in high school English class. And then, you know, it's mindset. We have defined mindset as the story that you tell yourself. And we've been using that definition for years now, in my personal and professional opinion. That's the cleanest, clearest, most simple definition of mindset out there. I sat down and read 143 different definitions of mindset in one sitting. I didn't get through all of them. there's a lot of definitions of mindset out there. And just on my side of the street, I once erroneously, it's a little bit of a big word for me, thought that, well, there must be a standardized definition of this thing that people talk about so much. There's not. I could read you, I mean, just the American Psychological Association's definition of mindset is, it's right here. It's very interesting, complicated. And we're known for being very simple in this space. I did this work for 12 years, and then unbeknownst to me, we had a business interaction that turned into an opportunity, that if at the time I would have made the wrong bet that it was one-off thing when we certified our first group of coaches. Turns out I was very wrong. So we've been running certifications for coaches. So we teach coaches how to coach for the past 7 years. We've certified over 550 level one coaches. There's level one, level two, level three. I deliver, like I said, all of those trainings, which is very, very rare in the mindset space for one of the co-founders. Most people are trying to get in there and scale and get out. Not me. I love this work and I bust my ass. I hustle so I can work some more. The work fascinates me. I'm not here to help people. Okay. The first things first, I'm not that nice of a person. Okay. I come from a martial arts background. And so, you know, people ask me, well, why do you do this work from time to time? Because I think it's cool as shit. And it's got an X factor and it's held my attention and my borderline obsession since I saw it in 2003. I moved over to Thailand and fucked my knee all up twice. And a flash in the, I was only going to get so far, but my flash in the pan fight career, went up in smoke. And there I am, you know, thinking the universe hates me when in reality, it was just a story I was telling myself. And so I saw a guy judo chop a woman's bad breakup story with one word in 2003 at a workshop I went to. And I was like, that's cool as shit. And I got some, he did that to me stories for damn sure. I'm going to explore this. And then I started coaching full time in 2007. And yeah, this I've already said a couple of those things.
Could you unpack what that one word was when that changed?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I was about to bring up David Icke again because I fried my head, which does dovetail because I took some notes about valuable things that I think we can talk about for your audience that pertains to what they're interested in and what you all offer. And one of them is developing yourself on a personal level. Transformation. Why is that important when people start researching alternative histories and conspiracies? It's, in my personal and professional opinion, it's really fucking important because I degraded the quality of my life piling on tons of conspiracy shit way back in the day, before working on my mom and dad stories and girlfriend stories. And they did that to me stories, like my everyday, ordinary, run of the mill stories. I didn't address any of that. And then I started reading David Icke books and now I've got even more villains in my life. So
exactly. You can build up these resentments.
Oh, dude.
Build up these resentments, not just family and like people that you've had, like it going through like AA recovery and all that kind of stuff. Then I started realizing, oh my God, I have these fucking high level resentments against the government and against big pharma and all this stuff that can also just start tearing you apart.
Massively tearing you apart, creating overwhelm, inability to take any kind of action whatsoever. It sucked, dude. I sucked the joy out of my heart early on, when I got into the research stuff. We'll get into that. So there I am over in Thailand, minding my own business with a jacked up knee. So I wrestled in high school. I got into jiu-jitsu and Thai boxing in 1996. and had my first MMA fight in 1999. I got a handful of MMA fights. I won a couple of state kickboxing titles, and I was like, okay, cool. Well, let's keep going with this. I'm going to move to Thailand, polish up my skills. I'll be there for a year, come back and go pro. And so I went over there and jacked my shit up a couple of times, had my second knee surgery, and the whole thing stopped. And I had all the, I used that experience as the final piece of damning evidence in a case that I was secretly making against myself, that there was something seriously wrong with me. There's something wrong with me. I'm doomed to fail. I'm not good enough. Okay. And now, like, you went for it, buddy. You went for it. And you fell on your face because you're a born loser. Wonderful. And so that was the story I was telling myself every day, all day. And so I lived in Bangkok for 5 years, elementary school PE teacher. And that first year, after some of the emotional dust settled, I went down and did a 7-day cleanse at a resort on the island of Koh Samui. And during that 7-day cleanse, there was a guy there doing an emotional detoxification seminar. He ended up being my first mentor in this line of work. And I went in there, I laughed at the title. I was like, emotional detox, a bunch of fucking pussy. Like, what is this shit? I went though, thank God. And he talked about words. He talked about stories. He talked about identity. You know, take out identity, put in mindset. Take out mindset, put in character. They're interchangeable. And then he goes, hey, is there anybody stuck on a story? And this woman shot her hand up. And he goes, what's the story? And she told this, it would have been very painful, publicly embarrassing story of her and her friends in college rented a house down at the beach. Her boyfriend and all of his friends rented the house next door, add alcohol, press play. So her boyfriend hooks up with one of her friends in front of everybody the next night. And then he dumps her in front of everybody the night after that. Okay. We can all say ouch on three. And the sentence that held that whole thing together, the spell combination of words that held that whole thing together, was he did that to me. And the dude was smart. He knew what he was doing. He goes, cool. Say that again. He did that to me. Say it again. He did that to me. Like, duh. And then he goes, take out that last word, me, and put in the word himself. And it was like Brandon Powell smacked her in the face. Her head snapped back, and she said it with a stutter, and it went up at the end, up talk. He did that to himself? And then the breath unlocked, because victim stories are inherently stressful. He did do that to himself. And then she started going off about all this stuff and how he was really weird, and it wasn't going to work out anyway. And I saw that and I was like, dude, what did that guy just do to that woman in one word? What, and more accurately, what did he help her do for herself? Well, changed the story, which changed the perspective, it changed how about everything? And yeah, that was in 2003, and I haven't looked back, man.
How does that fit into, I've been sort of reading about and watching videos on this new, like, I don't know if it's new even, it might not, but it's new to me, but it's about how sort of the next level of thinking is thinking about your thinking.
Dude, that's Alan Watts.
That might have been an Alan Watts on the plane, actually. I might have fallen asleep listening to that.
Yeah. Dude, one of my favorite things to do when I want to zoom out and get just extra space, extra clarity, I go to YouTube and I plug in Alan Watts Chill Step. And I will listen to hours of that. And they'll take, it's like, you know, a couple of paragraphs, and then they'll go into the music. And he says in one of his snippets from his lectures, he said, when you learn to think about your thinking, you become alive in a new way.
That might be the exact line. I mean,
yeah,
that might be. And I've just been sort of playing with it, and it just sort of changes. I mean, everything. I mean, I don't know about change it, but you can sort of just detach from taking everything personally. Is sort of what I've noticed about it. Is just like, oh well, whatever, you know. And I don't really have a big problem with taking things personally anyway. But you know, yeah. We all have those intimate relationships and stuff like that where it's just sort of baked in, you know. That taking things personally is going to pop up once in a while. And I can just sort of, I find it almost the quickest way I've been able to find to defuse anything is just like, well, why am I thinking that? And then it's like, even if it is a real reason, it just sort of loses a bunch of intensity.
That right there is a skill. And coming from someone who grew up, came through the public school system and having a degree in how to enforce that public school system, people don't get taught that in the public school system, how to do that. People do not get taught how to use their words to stay focused on what's important and keep the drama low and build themselves up in their imagination, self-image. That's what your self-image is. It's how you see yourself in your imagination and feelings of confidence and competence. Okay. And how to dismantle the victim mentality. He's wasting my time versus I'm wasting my time. Whoa, those are two different sentences that take me in two completely different directions. I need her to respect me more. No, I need me to respect me more. Whoa. And it dismantles the dreaded victim mentality. And that right there is it's the skill of all skills, in my opinion, because nothing is more prevalent. The biggest scourge on humanity is self-inflicted victim mentality, self-inflicted victimization, and it's happening across. There's something going on with how languages around the world are architected and promoted, and utilized and taught, shared. It's an inheritance too. It's this multi-generational thing that keep people in these chronic upregulated stress states, and well, if you want to control somebody, stress them first. Stress them first. How many people took that COVID shot because they were scared of something? Whether it was the COVID boogeyman. I didn't fucking do that. I'm very vocal about that. I did the exact opposite. I took the strongest line in the sand that anyone could take. No. And yeah, I mean, how many people went down that path because they were scared of what people would say at work. I had three people in my life tell me that they got vaccinated because of being worried, scared about what other people at work would say. Not that people at work said anything. They were just worried. They were scared in their head about what they would say, and they went ahead and did it. So they never came in contact with an angry person at work that was bullying them or, you know, trying to talk them into it. It was just someone they created in their own mind. And so, yeah, if you want to control a population, scare the shit out of them first. And then the breath is going to be trapped in the chest and their discernment is going to be in the shitter. And then you just lead them around by the nose. So
I was going to ask that as far as because since four and a half years we chatted with you first, and it's really this victim culture, like your work is so important, especially now with this victim culture that seems to be increasing, you know, the oppressor versus the oppressed, all that. Yep. I mean, it's really, really, I think, important to address it and get out, allow people a way to get out of that.
Yeah,
it's crazy to me to see it all, how insane it is.
Which they tricked us into on both sides, right? Because it's like one side's got the rights, the oppressor, and the other side, you know, we've got all the freedom people, the government's the oppressor, and there's just like oppressors all over the place, even in the communities that would consider themselves not oppressed or would say they're not oppressed.
Bullseye. And if you look at the language patterns, the way the words are constructed, if you take out the specifics, you've got the same exact language patterns, which that to me, it's a little bit awkward at first. You know, where what side am I on? What allegiances do I have?
Yeah.
And, you know, my allegiance is to my breathing. Okay. My allegiance is to my discernment. And I do not come from a background where it was the exact opposite of that. It was Republicans. We were the Republicans, the blue collar Republicans. And I've taken what I like from all of that and I've left the rest. Yeah. Go talk. Okay. You can go in any direction. Go talk to some blue haired leftists. My buddy Travis Haley calls them poison dart frogs. Go get their story and put it on paper, and then go get some good old boy Republican America people from Danville, Virginia, and put their story on paper, and then go get some black Israelite people and put their story on paper, and then go get dude, it sounds weird to say, but go pick some weird fucker off the Epstein list and go get their story and put it on paper. Their victim story. It's going to have it's 2 + 2 = 4. It's going to have the same language to it. It's going to have the same language patterns to it. And I could throw in anybody, you know, man hating women. Okay. Women hating men, the manosphere, the patriot down with the page, dude, it all sounds the same. So what does that tell me? That the real home base is being centered and grounded and breathing well and being able to think and laugh and you know. Stay zoomed out.
Is this how generational is this? Does this problem go back forever? Is this sort of something, is it a state of arrested development? Like what is going on? Because I feel like this can't be something that humans have dealt with forever, or maybe it has.
I would imagine that, okay.
Because I'll caveat that by saying it seems like in Alan Watts era, there was just like and it could just be, you know, we tend to paint the past with either a brighter brush or a duller brush, but it seemed like there was just maybe like English was a lot more deliberate. People maybe were a lot more deliberate with their words. When you listen to like old like Napoleon Hill stuff and the stuff written 100 years ago, it's the same language. It's highly translatable, but it's still a different language. You know what I mean? Like Graham would probably speak to this better than me because he's read hundreds of these books that are over 100 years old.
Well, that's what I kind of wanted to ask about, which kind of would just build on Darren's question a bit. We can make it one big topic, but you get into the real esoteric part as well about the language and all that too. And English seems to be specifically designed for control, maybe like with spell and spelling. And there's people that kind of deconstruct all these words that have esoteric meanings. Is that part of the trap right now?
Probably. You know,
finding a new oppressor.
Why is this is, you know, if there's an oppressor, I'd want it to be self-inflicted because then I can do something about it.
Yeah.
Am I going to go get convinced Benjamin Netanyahu to keep his fucking bombs in his pants or am I going to be able to change the story I'm telling myself about a girl I dated last year? Where's my leverage lie? And my dad, he said that when he was growing up, they would see the word incredible about once or twice a year. They would see the word incredible once or twice a year, and it would be in a newspaper. And when that word showed up somewhere,
you paid attention.
Damn right. They would
take awesome. Like you just hear awesome thrown around so much. And I'm like, really? Awesome.
Dude, yeah, it's cooked. Like our language is so blown out. You know, we mind blowing Pokeball.
And we didn't replace them. That's maybe part of the other problem, right? Like we kind of used up these words and we didn't. Maybe that's what the kids are trying to do with like RZA and whatever the fuck my kids are saying. I don't even understand.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, I've got nieces.
I'm not cringe, though. I think I'm the good one at least. So,
yeah, we're not chopped. We're not a chopped unk, as they say. Yeah. that's what they say.
No idea what you guys are talking about.
Yeah, chopped unk. Keep it that way, Graham. Yeah. So you all are familiar with the Donner Party, right?
Like Jeffrey Donner?
Sorry, Donner. Oh, not no. Dahmer, Donner. So the Donner Party in the 40s or 60s, I should know. They set out from the Midwest going to California, and they got started a little bit late in the season, and they took a path that had not been completely flushed out, and they got bogged down, and winter showed up early that year. So it was a perfect storm, no pun intended. And they got snowed in and trapped with 20 feet of snow, and then it just kept snowing near Truckee, Nevada, near Lake Tahoe. And about 40% of the people survived the entire winter. They got snowed in, and the people that survived resorted to cannibalism. And it's a very famous story. I mean, it's history. It's crazy fucking history.
Not as far from Dahmer as I thought, you know?
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. Isn't that weird? you know, if someone's name is Dennis, they're most likely to become a dentist. That's true too. And so
his name is Richard Parker. They're most likely to be eaten by their compatriots in a boating accident.
Dude.
So don't ever get in a boat with a dude named Dick Parker. Just
Dick Parker. Not doing it. Stay out of the boat. One of the survivors. And so I'm telling a story on how judicial people were with their words back then. One of the survivors wrote her sister back home in Virginia, of all places, wrote her a letter and said it had four sentences. After that crazy experience, four sentences. Okay. Stay at home. You have a good life. You do not know what trouble is. And then it was a fourth sentence. I forget. Those do not travel. Do not travel. Stay at home. You have a good life. You do not know what trouble is. That was the letter that she sent after that. And we actually have an online course that where one of the lessons we talk about the blown outness of language, and we say, you know, your dinner party wasn't a total disaster. Now, the Donner Party, on the other hand, that was a total disaster. So we get some dark humor in there because that was a total disaster. Nobody's dinner party has ever been a total disaster compared to that kind of total disaster. So there's so many examples of how our language has become just dangerous. And as this thing that we're in, that I see us in, speeds up, take out thing, put in transhumanist agenda, they need the increasing inflammation of the victim mentality to go hand in hand with that. Because in my personal and professional opinion, here's the formula: humanity plus the victim mentality. If there's 8 billion people creating a victim mentality, then the universe, if it truly is a feedback loop, is going to create a villain of equal proportions. Humanity plus the victim mentality plus technology, that equals the Borg. That equals the Borg. That shit does not look fun. Humanity plus a hero's mentality, an architect mentality, a language that unlocks the breath and expands things and makes things better. Journey.
That's what we used to get hammered into us, the myths, this we used to always be the hero's journey. Graham talks about this all the time and how that's just kind of gone away from modern storytelling. Now it's the villains, it's the you know,
everybody's a victim. And it's the victim anti-hero. Olympics.
And we've almost like started to elevate the anti-hero.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So is this a problem? Is this inherent in other non-English West as well? Like is South America, Asia, Africa have the same victimization and same oppressed kind of? I was thinking about when you guys were talking about language, I thought, I wonder if it's the same, you know, everywhere.
So what I did this morning before this podcast with you all, I did a session with one of our students in Northern Italy, and we got out some stories that he had, negative stories of his father, the victim villain dynamic in Italian. So we worked on those stories in Italian. He wrote them out in Italian. Guess who speaks no Italian? This kid right here. Nor do I need to get the scary stories out of someone's head and one, write them out. This is what we did. This was the showstopper, crowd pleaser. I'm a one trick pony. This is what we were doing in the workshops at Serpent Mound. This is what we'll be doing in Tennessee. This is what I always do with everybody. Hey, pick up that heavy ass pen and let's go get those scary stories. And we're going to air them out. Step one, title it, write it out. Two, read it. Three, read it slow. What happens when someone slows down their rate of speech? The breath loosens up. Very important. And then step four, read that same story slowly. And at the end of each sentence, take a full breath in and a full breath out. And what happens mechanically, so it doesn't matter what language it is that we're working the story on, when the breath loosens up and descends, the picture zooms out. And you go from the participant to the observer, or looking at something through a microscope to viewing it from afar. Charlie Chaplin said it, life viewed under a microscope is a tragedy, viewed from afar is a comedy. And that's what we help people do. So we don't have answers for anybody. We're a zero answer coaching methodology. It's to create space and clarity and unlock the breath. We're known as the language people. That's great. And push comes to shove, it's about the breath, which is one of the reasons why Brandon's work and our work pairs so perfectly together. I don't use that word very often, perfectly, much less so perfectly. And so I can work with anyone that can write their language down, that can write their stories down. There are languages. So the main languages that are spoken today, at least in the West, Spanish definitely has the same language patterns. Italian has the same language patterns. German has similar language patterns. And what I mean by similar language patterns, there's a way to put words together in German to where that person is responsible for my suffering.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was getting at, is are some languages more conducive to victimhood, you know? Or cultures. I mean, because the language might help create the culture. So
I'm going to guess that Japanese is less. Japanese seems to like just take like shit.
It's got
to
be different.
Be like, it's fine, man. Whatever. Keep rolling. We'll figure it out.
It's
disgrace. Yes. They know how to like this. They have disgrace, which in the West, you know, we don't give a fuck about disgracing ourselves anymore. I watch
not anymore
on Facebook on a daily basis. I see stuff that people post on Facebook that I'm like, man, if that was happened to me, and a lot of times it maybe is something I've gone through. So it's not, I'm not just talking out my ass, you know, it's a story or an emotion or whatever that you've had a similar experience with. And I was like, I didn't even tell my best friend that shit.
You know what I mean?
You're putting it on Facebook.
Just well, and airing it out.
Where's the humility? Or is maybe that what you're supposed to be doing? You know, is that better to air it out on Facebook? Because because to me, if you just keep it inside and deal with it, you're not a victim anymore. But if you throw it out on Facebook and get a bunch of people feeling sorry with you, it's almost like fucking.
Well, there's the point. Like
victim begging.
Yeah, there's the point. Why? Why is someone throwing that out on Facebook? Some people air their dirty laundry for sympathy. And sympathy is a powerful drug. Some people air their dirty laundry out or share the stories because they truly 100, they don't even need to be 100. Let's just say 90% of them wants out. They want help. They want to get better. And you know what? If my sharing my story that's embarrassing can help someone else with an embarrassing story like that, then good. So be it. So it's for me, it gets down to why, you know, there is, you know, monetized suffering. Okay. There are people on Facebook that are like, oh, I just went through the fucking darkest night of my soul. Here's a picture of my ass in a bikini on the beach. Join my 9-day Reclaim Your Feral Womanhood priestess initiation spot, early bird, $8.97. Okay. That's weird. So I'm still,
you know, and
but an AA lifted
bot that just goes around and finds these sad stories on the internet and like automatically changes the language and spits it back out of
them. Some people would track me down and fight me.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So we'll continue to work with people that want that, because some people do not want that. Some people love their victim story. They are addicted to their victim story. Their entire social network is built around co-parenting, co-op. You're miserable together, commiserating with it. And it is the victim Olympics for some people. Whoever's got the biggest victim story is winning. And so what does everyone know?
Does everyone know their victim story, or is there about like, have some traits, but you don't really know why.
The more someone learns about the language, the more they're going to understand why they create the stories that they have. And that in and of itself loosens the death grip a lot. Okay. Yeah. And to go back to Japanese, their language goes from top to bottom. Ours goes from left to right. There are languages. So the answer is yes. So there are some languages that are more predisposed or have been shaped in recent years to facilitate the creation of the victim mentality more than others. There are languages. Benjamin Lee Whorf, I tried to read the book. It's too much for my head. He studied a tribe in the Amazon that they didn't have any reference of time. Okay. There are languages in Aboriginal languages in Australia that do not have left and right. They have north, south, east, and west. And if hey, hand me that glass over there on the southwest corner of the table.
They know much.
They know it like that. And so for sure, I mean, if someone paid me, well, I mean, we help people do this. It's like, I do get paid to do this. You could teach children to use the English language in a reflective, solid, affirmative, moderated way. And if that's how they learn to use the English language from the very beginning and grew up with that, that would turn into the unconscious use and unconscious competency. They would use the English language like that from the beginning. It would create a very strong, high psychological and emotional immune system, and you would make it damn near impossible for them to create a victim villain dynamic, just like it was in 1984 with Newspeak, when they were talking about I can't remember the specifics, but they were saying that there's ways to use the language where people can't even consider what the word freedom would have meant. You can't create the concept of freedom based on how the language is architected. So you're fucked forever.
Yeah.
And I think we're flirting with that.
Yeah.
We really are.
I think they'll have trouble because of the art. They can't do that unless they take get rid of the art first. I think that's sort of the big, that's the
interesting, very interesting.
That's the like,
the soul.
Yeah. And it's not just really being thought about. It's like the, yeah, it'd be like the soul to the computer, to the things you think you can engineer, but you can't. And I think that you could do it if you got rid of the art, but I think that like the, just all the different forms of art, whether it's myth, whether it's storytelling, whether it's painting, whether it's just that sort of like, that's where it'll go. And it'll still inspire feelings of those sorts of things. So I feel like those dystopian things, all those things sort of have that same idea where they also control all of that.
I dated a girl last year and, you know, we agreed upon some things. We disagreed upon some things like you would with anyone. And you know, when someone says something and it snaps you and you just, we were talking about the state of affairs and how things are moving forward. And she goes, art is going to be more important than ever in the future. And that happened. I was like, oh. And I didn't know why it happened. I didn't know why my body reacted that strongly to what she said. I mean, it was a full on yes. And I remember just looking at her. She wouldn't even look at me. I just looked at her. And I was like, that was interesting, beyond interesting and important. And so when you say that, yeah, that's, you know, art is a rebellious act in a way, because especially now, I mean, is art even taught in school anymore?
Well, beauty is making a comeback. I mean, you could say nice. Beauty, you could say beauty might be a way to describe it as well.
And art is making a comeback. I mean, I don't know if it ever went away, but all my kids are heavy into art, you know?
Yeah.
My kids also say retard again and stuff like that.
So thank God.
Like, the young ones are where it seemed like they were lost. It seems like they're coming back, which I think is, you know, I got my own reasons for not wanting my kids on social media, but I don't feel like it's the government's job to step in there. So, I mean, I think, you know, you can say that the reason they're blocking the kids from social media in Canada is because they want my ID on the internet. I think they already got my ID on the internet. You know, they know who the fuck I am. They've got it figured out. It's the kids aren't following the script. There's too much. They're finding reels and they're finding stuff that they're not supposed to find. So we got to keep them off it for as long as we can, because it's like, you know, if my kids didn't have that stuff, I don't know where they'd be at, but it's like, probably the same place I was when they were their age. Everything that everyone older than me thinks is retarded and communism is the best. And, you know, it's like when we were kids, I don't know how it was for you over there in Virginia, maybe it was different, but you know, Graham and I both sort of have that same sort of childhood and young adult thing where it was like no kids, overpopulated, you know, all of it. All the socialist talking points, basically.
But it was rebellious.
It felt rebellious at the time, yeah. And it turns out it was just exactly what they wanted is what it would seem like now.
20 years later, it was just normalized. But I want to make a... Unless you got something to react to that.
Nah, I'm take us somewhere, Graham.
The back to the culture and language part. Like, for example, you guys were talking about Alan Watts and how important that message was. Well, it sounds very Buddhist to me. So to kind of tie that into a different culture. So if you grow up in Buddhism with mindfulness and the ability to watch your thoughts, like you are the awareness behind your thoughts, not your thoughts itself. And when you start practicing that, you can see how thought number 10 got to that. You can follow this thread all the way back to the beginning. And that's got to permeate through the culture to the point where they get less, there's less reaction, there's less victimhood, there's less maybe blaming, because they have an inherent awareness of something, you know, bigger, that they're not their thoughts. Like, I guess that's kind of another way to ask the question about different languages and different cultures, right? It would seem to me like they'd be a little bit more bulletproof to the victim mentality.
I can speak for Thailand. It's definitely got a smoother, chiller vibe than the States. And dude, if you hear a Thai person raising their voice, look out.
Yeah.
Like, look out. They're probably not going to do it at you, being a foreigner. Farang is what they call us. But just like, if you see some Thai, it's super rare to hear Thai people yelling. So, you know,
that might mean it's still internalized, but not externalized or something.
And that's the caveat there. That's the catch. When those people blow a top, they really blow a gasket. Yeah, I think anything that helps people become more self-aware is a good thing. I mean, you know, wrestling will help you become more self-aware. You're going to meet yourself in those practices in a hot, sweaty ass room. Like, you know, I mean, how about hunting, Darren? How many self moments of self-reflection have you had out on a hunt? You know, insights of all insights, most likely.
Yeah. A lot of humility.
Yeah. 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 Anything that helps with that, it helps just to keep it simple.
Where can people find out more about all this stuff? Obviously Enlifted, you mentioned some other podcasts. Do you have a blog, anything like that? Social media?
We've got two outlets or two ways people can learn more about Enlifted. One is our website, enlifted.me. It's about the certs. Okay. All the information you would like to know about the certs and the ability to book in for a discovery call with me and talk about them. And then also we have an online course, 21 10-minute lesson. So it's super easy, low price point. And then Instagram @enliftedcoaches. That's a free language school with a side order of entertainment. And if you have any questions about anything that we covered on this podcast, message me there. I answer everything coming in and out of there. You can also join us for a contact at the cabin in March. It's March of 27. Is that
March 18th to 22nd? Yeah, it's the equinox, I just realized. Oh, so we'll go right from the solstice to the equinox.
In Tennessee, up in the mountains. That's beautiful. Beautiful time of year. It won't be winter. It'll be just starting to get into spring. I looked at the venue. I was like, man, these guys do it right. I'll be there doing this work. Brandon Powell will be there doing this work. So Brandon and I, we go back. We were in a class for retarded kids in the sixth grade together. And I'm using the word retard by definition. So the definition of retard is to impede the development of or impeded development. And at that point in time, both he and I and 12 other kids, our development was impeded. And so that's sixth grade in Midlothian Middle School. They took us and put us in the top. It was an annexed building, two floors. There was 25, 26 classes on each floor. The second floor, there was no one in any of those classes except for us. And they put us all the way down on the end and in the corner. And there was 13 of us in that class. Most classes were 20, 21, 22 kids. And we only interacted with the other kids in the sixth grade during lunch and PE. And they would read books to us and tell us how to use glue. And there were some weird kids in there. So anyway, Brandon, one of my best friends, he and I, yeah. And so come hang out with us. And these fine gentlemen in Tennessee, that's another place people can get some of this and hang out with all the other cool people that come to the contacts at the cabin. Nah, man, fellas, I was really impressed. I was glad I came up. I was glad to meet you all. Both y'all were cool as shit. You know, the people on your team also cool as shit. Everybody up there. It was fun. You need that. Fun's a real thing.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, this has been fantastic. We don't want to keep you too long. It is the 4th of July. Happy 250th birthday, Virginia, right? Original six.
We had a say in some things.
Absolutely. Well, those guys are rolling over in their grave at this point.
So. I know.
Mark England.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on the show. I can't wait to hang out again in March and do this all again. Something tells me we'll be doing more of it down the road. People can check that out, contact@thecabin.com. But, Mark, I did also have to pause your upload for a bit there because the internet was sketchy. So just leave your browser open for a little while until it finishes uploading for us. But other than that, Mark, enjoy. Happy 250 and have a great weekend. If you see Brandon, tell him we said hey.
I will. Thanks, fellas.
Yeah. Now, as a chat, friend of the show, Mark England, what'd you think?
Yeah, that was good. I meant to, I forgot what it was, but I wanted to talk about the positive aspect of sharing your story, which is kind of like an AA thing, right? Like helping people by sharing, you know, like one of the things you learn in AA is like, how progressive things are, and you know, from other people's horror stories, you kind of learn from that. I forgot it till the end here. It's too bad. Next time I'll have to talk to him about it. But
absolutely, big thanks to Mark for coming on the show. Big thanks to you guys for listening. Happy 4th of July. I mean, this won't come out on the 4th of July, but whatever. Happy 4th of July to all our Americans. I mean, we love you guys. You guys, it's almost all Americans. It's like 80% of the people that listen to this show, come to the events, do everything, are the Americans. So we love you guys. Happy 250th birthday. Our elbows are decidedly down in Grammerica. We love you. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
We're dropping the gloves.
That's work.
So profusely, so profusely.